Good evening. We begin with breaking news tonight and word just moments ago that the storm named Elsa is now a hurricane. With that, I want to go straight to CNN meteorologist Tom Sater. Tom, what's the latest on this storm?
Well, Anderson, within the last hour, hurricane aircraft have taken off to investigate Elsa. Now, it hasn't even arrived there, or it's just arriving now. So even without their valuable information and their data, the National Hurricane Center went ahead and increased this value of Elsa from tropical storm to a Category 1 hurricane based on the information coming from the radar out of Tampa. And we agree. We knew it was going to happen at some time this evening, and it will make landfall most likely as a Category 1. More on that in a minute. We've got a lot of activity still down to the south. That's going to follow suit. So our rain amounts are going to increase. We're going to see 5 to 10, maybe isolated 15 now. The very first hurricane warning issued today for the West Coast since Hurricane Michael 3 years ago in 2018. And for good reason. We're looking at landfall right around sunrise up in the Big Bend. The last time we had a July hurricane for the west coast of Florida was 134 years ago. That's how rare it is in July. It was 1886. Yeah. When you look at the storm surge, big concerns now, because now that we have a Category 1, everything from this parallel northward is under the gun as far as a surge of at least 3, 4, even 5 feet. When you look at the radar, we've had a lot of lightning around the core, so that's another indication that things have really been firing up and that core is intensifying. Now, the crews at Surfside are pretty much in the clear. They may have another passing shower or two overnight tonight, but their rough weather was earlier today when a feeder band moved in. So good news for them. Now concerns are from around areas of Venice up toward Tampa Bay. Notice the tornado watch. That's in effect until 11 o'clock, and most likely they'll increase that and take it further to the north as this tracks further to north. Now watch. Here we are, current time period. Heavy band still moving into Marco Island. At 3 a.m., it's almost directly west from Tampa Bay. The surge will really start to increase about an hour and a half before that, and continue at this area. But once it moves a little north, let's say 4 o'clock into 5 o'clock, the winds wrapping back around are going to continue to pull that water into every into areas of Tampa Bay. So Clearwater is going to have its closest impact with this. Very big concerns with the strong wind gusts. In Key West, we had gusts up to 70 miles per hour or stronger. So that's enough for damage. Once it makes its way, again, through areas of South Georgia and the Carolinas, it'll be downgraded to a depression. And then by Friday morning, it's back off the coast again as a tropical storm. So again, we still have the risk of loss of life and property. Do not take this, you know, just joking manner here, because it was a tropical storm. You're not going to tell the difference between the intensity of a strong tropical storm or hurricane Category 1. Again, very rare in July. First one here. This is going to be many because the season really is taking off with quite a punch. It's nothing that we really wanted to see just
Tom
yet,
Sater.
But that's where we are.
Yeah, appreciate it, Tom. Thanks. We're going to have a live report from Florida a bit later in the program. We begin, though, with the insurrection. 6 months to the day. That's how long since we witnessed the worst attack on our democracy by Americans since the Civil War. Now, think about that for a moment as you look at new video released just today from the Justice Department showing a mob of Trump supporters attacking officers guarding the Senate chamber. 6 months to the day. Prosecutors say the defendant in the red MAGA hat climbed scaffolding around the Capitol to get in the building while carrying a baton. This was one of a string of videos released today. His case, one of more than 500 now being prosecuted. Here's another clip. We're just going to let this one run raw so you're reminded of the chaos and the violence of that day, which is important because some lawmakers, as you know, they want you to believe that what you're seeing didn't really happen. Six months since the Sicknick family lost their son, Brian. 6 months since more than 140 officers were beaten, pepper sprayed, choked, tasered, maimed in what was an attempt to overturn the election. Now, you would think it would also have been a wake-up call, just like the 9/11 attacks were 20 years ago this September. Can you imagine anyone of any consequence back then trying to downplay what happened? Or say we should just put it all behind us? Or worse yet, actually argue on the culprit's behalf, as the former president did this weekend.
Who shot Ashley Babbitt? It's got to be released. And how come so many people are still in jail over January 6th?
Ashley Babbitt is the woman who was shot dead as she tried to break into the speaker's lobby as lawmakers were being escorted to safety. Today, 6 months later to the day, Republican Congressman Paul Gosar put out a statement echoing the former president's call for the officer who shot her to be named. That officer, by the way, has already been cleared of criminal wrongdoing. He's also been receiving death threats, according to his attorneys. Now, trying to expose him for doing his job is how Congressman Gosar is marking this day. And 6 months a day, other people who stood up to the former president and his lies have also gotten death threats. Not only that, also the family of one person who stood up for the truth got them as well. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's wife, Tricia, telling Reuters she received a series of threatening texts as recently as April. "You and your family will be killed very slowly," one of those read. Another warned of a, quote, "unfortunate accident" the family would have. Still another read, quote, "We plan for the death of you and your family every day." Now, don't forget that 6 months later to the day, the handful of Republican lawmakers who stood up for the truth had basically been cast aside by their party. Congresswoman Liz Cheney stood up for the truth and was stripped of her leadership position. And 6 months to the day, it's the lie that won't die. Quoting reporting today in The Washington Post, quote, "Of the nearly 700 Republicans who filed initial paperwork with the Federal Election Commission to run next year for either the U.S. Senate or the House of Representatives, at least a third have embraced Trump's false claims about his defeat." Late this evening, President Biden weighed in with a statement reading in part, "Not even during the Civil War did insurrectionists breach our Capitol, the citadel of our democracy, but 6 months ago today, insurrectionists did." The president went on to call it a sad reminder that there is nothing guaranteed about our democracy. Joining us, a Republican lawmaker who does not believe in the big lie, Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. Congressman, thanks for being with us. Do you think your Republican colleagues even watch those videos? I mean, or try to stay up to speed on various investigations?
No, I don't think so. I think they purposely avoid it. I mean, I think the vast majority, if not all of them, my colleagues, believe that this was a Trump-incited insurrection. But when you're in a tribe and, you know, if you say something truthful that gets you kicked out of the tribe, you keep your head down and you stay in the tribe. I don't think they believe it. But if you watch the videos, you get that tinge of guilt, and it's much easier to just paper over that tinge of guilt, hope that this organically just kind of fixes the glitch, and nobody's willing to step up. It's disappointing, of course. It's sad. And I think what's even more sad, Anderson, is not that, you know, so many people that aren't acknowledging the truth. It's that there are millions of people, base voters, Republican voters, many in my district, that believe the big lie. And it's not really their fault, although everybody's responsible for what you believe and doing research. But all the leaders they trust are sitting here telling them it's a big lie. And everything that they see on CNN or everything they read in the paper is a lie. And it's just a cover up. That's what I think the biggest tragedy is, much, you know, not to mention what it's doing to our republic.
I mean, we are so polarized now as you know, as a nation in terms of the information we're willing to believe or accept or the facts we're willing to see. I mean, if those videos were police on the Capitol being attacked by Muslims or Black Lives Matter protesters, the very people who deny what it actually happened would be arguing the exact opposite thing. They would be outraged. They would be using this, and they would be talking about this every day and wanting to launch investigations. It's just sad that we're in this time when, because of the people call themselves patriots who attacked police, who attacked the Capitol, this is what we're now dealing with.
Well, that's the other thing is, you know, what are they doing to the term patriot? I mean, to be called a patriot used to be a great thing. Now, I feel like it puts you in the league with insurrectionists. And you know darn well that if this was BLM, or if this was actually Antifa, or if this was Muslims that did this, you know, if the equivalent of Ashley Babbitt had been shot, because, by the way, when she breached that door, she put every lawmaker that was present at risk. And frankly, if she hadn't been shot, as sad as it is that she was misled to that point, had she not, you easily could have seen more people breach and more deaths. And I tell you, I guarantee you, Paul Gosar would be the one defending the action of that officer instead of calling that officer, who in my mind is a hero, a murderer. And this is why I think it's so important for us just to have conversation again. And it's going to take, you know, my friends on the left being willing to reach out and not constantly pointing and saying, you didn't do enough then, you did. And restoring that conversation, it's why I started Country First, which is country1st.com, by the way, to just say, learn to talk to each other again, because we're not going to be able to yell our way out of this. And we need to take those that are lying to the American people, and we need to make sure they never win an election again.
What is it like being one of the only people in your party willing to actually speak out about what happened on January 6th, stand up to the big lie publicly? I mean, you alluded previously to the threat your stance may pose to your career. I know you'll say that's not really, you know, what concerns you, that things are more important than that. But, I mean, does it frustrate you at all that, you know, this could get you voted out of Congress?
Look, it makes me sad. Sad because I know this is true, and all my colleagues know this is true. It's confusing because I thought so many of the people I know, like Kevin McCarthy, had a red line that they just wouldn't cross, that there would be no payoff worth crossing that line. It feels isolating, but I'm going to tell you, seriously, it actually is very peaceful because I know I can say what's true. I know that even if I'm standing alone with Liz Cheney and a few others, like those that voted with me to impeach and, you know, some of the senators, I know that history will judge it correctly. And I know that it's a very important thing. There's never been a moment in Congress, Anderson, no matter any vote I've taken, any speech I've given, that has ever to me been more cut and dry and clear and more of a demanding desire and need even to stand alone to tell that truth. Because I really believe, and I'm not being emotional or dramatic, I believe that the future of this country and the republic rests on telling people the truth. And until we accept that, there is real damage done to not just America, but America's reputation with these Putin-type tactics that are happening.
I want to ask you about Afghanistan. We talked about this the last time that you were on. Not only do you serve there in the Air Force, you're also currently serving the Air National Guard as a lieutenant colonel. I know you've said you disagree with President Biden on his decision to withdraw U.S. forces. The decision obviously has been made. Are you surprised? I assume you're not surprised at what's happening there. The Taliban is obviously capturing new territory. We're seeing, you know, Afghan troops giving up in some places. And obviously a lot of Afghan, you know, forces, soldiers, police have been killed fighting the Taliban. But is this just, I mean, how bad do you think it's going to get?
I think this is going to be atrocious. I think it's going to be bad. I think it's, you guys are going to be covering terrible scenes out of Afghanistan. The Afghan army has collapsed. And by the way, they were doing 99% of the fighting. When we were there, we were just using that base basically to stiffen their spine and do counterterrorism. I just hope we can get the translators out right now. That's the only sense of maybe light we can have out of this dark moment.
Yeah. Congressman Adam Kinzinger, I really appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
Anytime.
Coming up next, Dr. Anthony Fauci joins us to talk about breaking news on COVID and just how quickly that new Delta variant has spread across the United States and other countries around the world. And later, live reporting from Surfside on the surge, even as rough weather brushes the area. A warning today from President Biden on COVID. Despite cases and deaths being down 90% since January, the latest form of the virus should be taken very seriously.
In today's briefing, we discussed how the Delta variant is already responsible for half of all cases in many parts of this country. It's more easily transmissible, potentially more dangerous, and it should be because of reconsideration. And look, let me put it another way. It seems to me this should cause everybody to think twice.
The president's warning comes in the wake of word from the Israeli government that as the Delta variant has spread there, the efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine has fallen. Joining us now is Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the president's chief medical advisor. So, Dr. Fauci, the CDC announced that the Delta variant makes up more than half the coronavirus cases in the U.S. New infections are up in 10 states. Can you just put this in perspective? I mean, amid the dire warnings, the Delta variant is doubling about every 2 weeks. What concerns you the most?
Well, what concerns me, Anderson, are the people who are not vaccinated. Clearly, the vaccines that we use in this country do quite well against the Delta variant, particularly with regard to protecting against serious advanced disease requiring hospitalization. There have been a number of studies that show, you know, variable degrees of protection against initial infection. But when it comes to serious consequences, the vaccines that we use are really quite effective in preventing advancement to severe disease. For that reason alone, as the president had alluded to just a moment ago in the clip that you played, people really need to reconsider those who don't want to get vaccinated. We have a situation in the United States, Anderson, where we have more vaccine than we need. I mean, we have vaccines for everyone and anyone who needs it, and there are places in the world where people would do anything to get vaccine. And yet, we have a substantial proportion of people in very specific regions of the country who just do not want to get vaccinated, despite the fact that we have a significant threat, as you mentioned in the piece, from a virus that has a greater degree of capability of spreading from person to person. No doubt about that. We've seen that in multiple countries, and actually can cause more severe disease. So if ever there was a reason to get vaccinated, this is it.
I want to, the Israeli government released a statement yesterday saying that it found a drop in protection from the Pfizer vaccine and linked the drop to the spread of the Delta variant of the virus. Now, according to the statement, the Pfizer vaccine provided 64% protection against all infections, including asymptomatic infection and mild disease, 93% efficacy in preventing severe disease and hospitalizations, as you indicated earlier. Obviously, 93 is still a high number, but I mean, how, when I saw this headline, I got very concerned. Then once you read it more, it's basically saying there's not people being hospitalized and dying from the Delta variant who have been vaccinated in Israel, but some are still, but the efficacy drops. You're more likely to get infected with the Delta variant, even if you've been vaccinated. It'll just be mild. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Well, according to the announcement from the Israelis, what you said, Anderson, is correct. The data is sparse. We are all trying very hard to get more specific, granular data about that. You know, the Israelis know what they're doing. We're not doubting that, but we want to make sure exactly what the circumstances were of that drop from 94% infected protection against asymptomatic infection down to 64. Is that a reflection that they're more aggressively testing everybody and anybody who's come into contact with a person who has an asymptomatic infection? I don't know. We need to know that right now. We need to watch it very carefully, but we need to get more granular and specific data from the Israelis.
Last year, every time that there was a holiday or a long weekend, the number of new infections went up. I know the TSA is reporting more than 10 million people passed through airports this past weekend. Do you have a sense yet of what the case numbers may look like?
No. No, not yet, Anderson. That's going to probably take a couple of weeks at least before we find that out. I mean, very clearly, as I've said before, the risk is significant if you are not vaccinated. If you are vaccinated, you dramatically diminish your risk of getting infected in the first place, and extraordinarily dramatically diminish the risk of you getting severe disease. So again, I don't want to seem like a broken record, Anderson, but it is what it is, and that's what's happening, that if we do get surges, they're going to be regional among those areas of the country where the level of vaccination is low. We still have some areas of the country where the percent of vaccinated people is like 30%, which is very, very low. We've got to get it up above that. Otherwise, people in those particular locations are going to wind up having a higher degree of risk of infection, and you're going to see more infections and more hospitalizations, and unfortunately, in some cases, maybe even increase in deaths.
And even people who are currently getting infected, who haven't been vaccinated, they're, even if they have mild cases, they are still at risk for you know, whether you call them long haul symptoms or
right,
you know,
long term
COVID symptoms.
Long COVID. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, Anderson, because that's one of the things that people really don't have a good appreciation of. If you get infected, and a lot of young people understandably, but unfortunately, feel that way. They say, well, you know, I don't want to get vaccinated. If I get infected, the chances are that I'll have only mild or no symptoms at all. They're correct. Statistically, the likelihood of their getting severe disease is much less than in an elderly person or a person who has an underlying condition. But what we are starting to see now more of are people who get very mild infection, who have this long COVID, which is a persistence of symptoms, sometimes debilitating, that can go on for many, many weeks. So even though you clear the acute infection, you have things like profound fatigue, muscle aches, temperature dysregulation, lack of ability to concentrate. It's something that needs to be taken seriously. And that's the reason why we alert young people, don't think you're exempt from serious issues, including something that you may not have even thought of, namely long COVID after you clear the infection.
No. Again, the key, vaccinating, getting vaccinated. Dr. Anthony Fauci, appreciate it. Thank you.
Good to be with you, Anderson.
Coming
Thank
up next, we're going to go to live to Florida for more of our breaking news there. Elsa, now a Category 1 hurricane, how residents are preparing and how Elsa may affect the surge for victims in Surfside, Florida. Our breaking news again, Elsa, now a Category 1 hurricane as it moves up Florida's Gulf Coast. We're going to get a live report on the storm in a moment. But first, obviously, Elsa is a major concern for the search and rescue mission in Surfside, Florida, on the opposite coast, where officials a short time ago said four more victims have been located, bringing the total to 36, with 109 people unaccounted for. Three more victims now identified as well. Rosa Flores joins us now from Surfside. Just a few moments ago there, she was given access to the site of the search and rescue mission. What's the scene like?
You know, Anderson, you can feel the urgency while you're on the ground because you're surrounded by heavy machinery and also by first responders. And you can also feel the pain. I mean, just the thought that under the pile of debris, there could still be either people alive or people buried under the rubble. So many lives that have been cut short and dreams that have been cut short. I want to take you through these pictures that we took from the ground, but I also want to warn our viewers because I know that so many families around the country and the world, quite frankly, know people who lived in this building. And I want to take you through it. We were across the street, so the first portion of the debris pile that we see is actually part of the controlled demolition. That is what is called the alpha portion of the search grid. Beyond that, where you see the heavy machinery, where you see the cranes shooting up into the sky, that's the portion of the original collapse. We know that about 200 brave men and women are working on that pile of debris at any given time. They're following voids. They're trying to find survivors. And then for the first time from the ground, we were actually able to see some of the sophistication that is being used to make sure that these brave men and women are safe. In the neighboring buildings, we could see that some of the support staff, that some of the support teams are monitoring the actual collapse area. We could see it on both sides. The other thing that we were able to see up close were also the dangers that these men and women are facing just by looking at some of that debris, the giant pieces of concrete and the mangled rebar as well. And Anderson, we were also able to see pieces of debris across the street where we were standing. And, you know, one of the things that really stood out to me was a piece of what appeared to be either a blind or wallpaper. And I couldn't help but thinking, you know, anybody who could recognize this, it could be, you know, from somebody's belonged to somebody's mom or somebody's grandmother. It was a floral pattern. So you just think of just so many things that cross your mind as we've covered this story and just the humanity of this, just so many people that either have lost loved ones there or hoping that their loved ones who are still missing are still alive. Anderson.
So on the original collapsed section of the area now that they are looking through, are they using heavy equipment or are they still kind of going slowly with individuals hoping to find somebody still maybe alive?
It's both. According to one of the captains that I talked to who was on the scene, he says that they still go very methodically through the grid pattern and they shore up any areas that they can. They support that system. They put in the cameras in any voids or holes to try to get further view. They also are using canines. Once they clear the area, Anderson, they know that they can move the bigger pieces of concrete, that's when they bring the big machinery in. And this captain explained this because he wanted to make sure that that's not confused with using heavy equipment and just moving the pieces of debris without first looking for survivors and first looking for signs of life. That is still happening. They're still delayering. There's 12 floors that they have to delayer through. They're going floor by floor, peeling those layers, Anderson, still looking for survivors.
Yeah. Rosa Flores, I appreciate it. Thank you. Perspective now on the mission there from Lieutenant Yuval Klein, who's with the Israeli Defense Forces Search and Rescue Delegation. Lieutenant Klein, thank you very much for being with us and for the work that you've been doing. How has the operation been going at this stage? How do you see this part of the operation?
Hi, thank you for having me here. The operation, we've been here for 12 days. It's a very tough job. We're looking for the missing people, beloved people of the families of the missing people. It's very tough. We're collaborating with the American Emergency Forces, very brave, good people. Work is processing very well. It took us some time to gather the data and the information, but now, as the building, the other part has been demolished, we're working very fast going through the site, and I think it's going in a very good pace.
One of the things early on was that there was hope that there may be voids, spaces in the rubble where someone might be. Obviously, there was a lot of pancaking of floors. It was late at night. People were in their beds. Have you found many void spaces?
To be honest, not at all. Not so many voids, almost no voids at all. The pancake, as you said, is very, very stacked. Stacked concrete. This is something we have seen in the past in several places. No voids, sorry to tell you.
You've obviously been speaking with families who have loved ones in the building, and one of the things that I know you're doing is trying to get details of the apartments. And can you just talk a little bit about why that's so important? Things like where the bed was, how they slept, what was in the apartment, the color of a carpet, things like that. Why does that help?
Right. So we're talking about a very, very large site, very high stacked concrete, thousands of square meters. And if we start searching in a blind way, it can take up to weeks to start piling off the concrete and finding the beloved ones. What we do is we use a technique. We question the families very, very thoroughly, very specifically. We gather information. We gather specific data from them. So we took the apartment plan of the building. We showed it to them. We asked them on every detail, what does the apartment look like? Where is the master bedroom? Where is the regular bedroom? What kind of distinct objects were in the room? Maybe did you have a mirror with a golden ring around it or a statue? Some people had bikes in their apartments. Any distinctive object that could help us give us signs where we are when we're digging and searching. And once we have this data of the people themselves also, birthmarks, tattoos, what they look like, jewelry, pendants, anything, even the direction where their head is on the bed, once we have that, we take the plan of the building and we look at the site itself and we can maximize the efforts, make them more accurate, more specific. We can aim the digging and make it faster to find the beloved ones.
Yeah. Well, it's extraordinary what you do and how you do it and the expertise that you bring to this. And there's a lot of families, obviously, around the world who are very grateful. Lieutenant Yuval Klein, thank you so much. We're going to have more on the impact of the hurricane with Randy Kay, who joins us from Clearwater Beach, Florida, on the west coast of Florida near Tampa right now. Randy, what are you seeing where you are?
Well, Anderson, we are just getting, just as you just tossed to us, we are just getting the first bits of rain here coming across right here in Clearwater Beach. It's Clearwater Harbor here behind me. And I don't know if you can see that, but there's still a couple of boats that are tied up out there. Hopefully they're tied up nice and tightly because you can see from these palm trees and now the rain, the storm is certainly picking up. The wind is picking up. We're expecting about 50 to 70 mile per hour wind gusts here. There are hurricane warnings here in Pinellas County and 34 other counties in the state of Florida. Also, there are tornado warnings, but the real concern, at least right now, is the rain, first of all, where we're expecting about 4 to 6 inches here, and also the storm surge, because the impact of the storm, the greatest impact, is expected overnight from about midnight until 8 a.m., and they expect that the storm surge will then coincide with the high tide, which is supposed to hit around 3 a.m., and that would really then push a lot of the water into Tampa Bay, into the Tampa area, and also into parts of Clearwater here. But Anderson, as the rain now is finally starting to come in, we've been waiting for it all day long. It's been staying closer to the center of the storm, but now it is starting to hit us. But I should just note that the last time a major hurricane hit the Tampa Bay area, granted this is not a major hurricane, it's a Cat 1 right now, and it's not expected to hit right here, but it is worth noting, it was 100 years ago, 1921, Anderson.
Yeah, Randy Kaye, appreciate you being there. Thank you. Just ahead, CNN has made a call in the race for the Democratic nomination for mayor in New York City. That news when we continue. Well, just moments ago, CNN called the race for the Democratic nomination for New York City mayor. CNN projects Brooklyn Borough President and former police officer Eric Adams has won what was a hard-fought, sometimes tense contest that swung in part on the issue of crime. Joining us now, our senior data reporter, Harry Enten. Harry, so CNN projects Eric Adams wins the primary. Take us through the vote totals, if you would.
Yeah, look, this was a long, confusing process, and we'll go through it for you. Look here, we had the initial preferences, right, which was essentially who were people's first choices. Eric Adams led in this total on election night. He still led even when all the absentees came in. Look at that. He was at nearly 31% of the vote. Maya Wiley at 21%. Catherine Garcia just a shade south of 20%. But remember, Anderson, we spoke about this. This was the first election in which New York City primary voters were going to get to use ranked choice voting. And what happened when we put in that ranked choice voting and everyone who weren't the top two candidates after all the rounds were done, you had their votes reallocated. What was the result? Well, this was the result. Look at this. Eric Adams wins by a single percentage point, less than 10,000 votes that he was able to defeat Catherine Garcia by. But you know what? A little less than 10,000 votes is good enough. And that's why we're projecting exactly what we are.
So much of this election has centered on crime in the city, which has been violent crime, which has been a rising concern, obviously, in cities nationwide. How much of that do you think factored into the win for Adams, who obviously, I believe, retired as a police captain?
Yeah, you know, when it's less than 10,000 votes, a lot of things can make a big difference, right? And Eric Adams didn't just retire as a police captain, but also really focused in on crime in this campaign. In fact, when he's a state senator, he had this video up where he was finding all this stuff in his children's bedrooms, and he was trying to instruct parents how to look. And if you look at the polling, right, what do we see? What did we see? What we saw was that when you looked at whether or not folks wanted more cops on the subways, 69% of Democratic primary voters agreed with that. This is really the first New York City Democratic primary that I can really recall that was determined by crime since probably 1977 when the incumbent Abe Beame was defeated. That's so long ago that my father was first basically put into the judgeship by Abe Beame. Both of those guys are gone, but crime, still a pretty big issue, at least in Democratic primary voters' minds. And you see then the results with Eric Adams barely squeezing by here.
Yeah, I mean, so people aren't used to seeing these levels of crime in New York City over the last couple of decades. I understand the Board of Elections, which has been criticized for botching how they rolled out results over the past couple of weeks, they had a timing issue today, right?
They had I would say they had a timing issue, Anderson. I mean, look at this tweet that they put up. This was earlier on. This is insane. We promise today's release is more a brunch special versus club hours. Well, I appreciate the humor. I like a joke as much as anybody else. But, you know, I'm not a fancy man, Anderson. I don't really eat brunch. But my understanding is brunch probably runs maybe to 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. These results were not hoisted up until the early evening hours. So, you know, the Board of Elections, they've been terrible throughout the entire process. And even today, when they were basically cleaning it up, they were still terrible and they got their meals confused. Maybe they thought it was Linner or something. I don't know.
I got to say, I'm not a person who brunches either. And I never understand, is it like early in the morning? Is it before lunch or is it after lunch? You seem to indicate it's after lunch. I don't know. Can you walk us through it just in layman's terms, this whole saga? I mean, because, again, it's been bungled from the beginning, hasn't it? I mean, they miscounted the votes.
Yeah, and by the way, I have no idea when brunch is. I'm just going to eat dinner. That's going to be my one meal of the day. And I ordered it. It's chirp and chicken. I hope it arrives soon at my apartment. Look, here's the situation. The situation is this, right? We had Election Day on June 22nd. You might recall it. I remember it. I believe I was on your program with the former Speaker of the City Council, yes, Christine Quinn. And then what happens? Then on June 29th, they were supposed, and there was initial results released on June 22nd. On June 29th, they were supposed to release the ranked choice results without the absentees. Well, they did that, but they also included 135,000 test ballots. Oh, my God, just clean out the machine. This is not, you know, you're supposed to be doing this for a living. You had one job, and they couldn't do that. Then you finally get the results right with the ranked choice voting without the absentees on June 30th. They corrected it. And then you jump forward to today, July 6th. The New York City Board of Elections promises their ranked choice with absentees close to brunch time. But again, as we were talking about, they released it in early evening, so closer to dinner or dinner time. And I'm very much looking forward to my dinner.
I look forward to your dinner as well.
Thank you, Anderson. That's very kind of
you. Coming up, an update from Georgia on the murder of a golf pro and two others found dead at a country club outside of Atlanta. That's next. Authorities are still searching for the suspect who shot to death a golf pro and left two others dead in a pickup truck at a country club outside Atlanta. Our Gary Tuchman has been following the story of the new developments.
A killer remains on the loose, and grief and fright remain prevalent emotions at the Pine Tree Country Club in Cobb County, Georgia. The bodies of two men were found on the bed of this pickup truck that was driven onto the 10th green of the club's golf course. But before the discovery is made of those victims who had been shot, Gene Siller, the club's director of golf, the resident golf pro, went to see why there was a truck on the green. He was shot in the head and killed. Police declaring, it does not appear he was in any way targeted, but rather was killed because he witnessed an act of crime taking place. Brian Katrick was a friend of Gene Siller's and a member of the club.
I think the reaction from the members right now is still one of pretty profound shock.
Cobb County police say the identity of the suspect is still unknown. One of the first two victims has been identified as the owner of the truck. The other victim has not been identified.
The fact that this happened in the fashion that it did, we could have lost Gene. We could have lost any of our friends in a number of ways that day in just as quick a fashion.
Tire tracks remain on that 10th green, which has become a memorial to Gene Siller, a husband and father of two small boys. The country club says his wife Ashley and other family members paid their respects at that memorial on Monday. Rand Eberhardt is a pastor who was also Gene Siller's friend.
Gene was a guy that built community through hard work, through patience, through service, through selflessness. Those kind of characteristics are easy to follow, and it's a big void that is left in our community.
As horrifying and as violent as these crimes are, and with the gunman still on the loose, it's notable police are not asking nearby residents to take any out-of-the-ordinary precautions. Current information reveals there is not an active threat to the public at large, and there was not a directed threat to residents of the neighborhood. So if police know that, do they have an idea of what led to the killings of the first two victims? All they will say is that it's too early to speculate.
Gary joins us now. So Gary, I mean, do we know why police are indicating there's no threat to the community?
Police are not telling us, Anderson, but an obvious hypothesis here is that the gunman somehow knew the first two men he shot and then targeted them. And that may be why police are not very concerned about people in the neighborhood. And it's important to stress that police also pointed out, as you just heard, that this third man, the golf pro, Mr. Siller, was not targeted. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Also, a lot of our viewers might be wondering, what the heck was this truck doing on the golf course? Why did that happen? That's bizarre. We don't know the answer to that. There's some speculation that he was trying to cut through the golf course to get away from something, but we don't know. And finally, Anderson, the country club itself, it's been closed. It's reopening tomorrow. The golfers there are being told they can golf holes 1 to 9, and then when we get to 10, that's going to remain closed. That's a memorial. They can pay their respects at 10 and then continue their 18 holes by going to hole 11. Anderson.
Gary Tuchman, I appreciate it. Thank you. Up next, what the U.S. Olympic track and field team said tonight about the status of star sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson. You may remember that star sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson has been ruled ineligible for the women's 100-meter dash at the Tokyo Olympics because a drug test discovered the presence of a chemical found in marijuana. Well, within the last few hours, the U.S. track and field roster was announced for the entire game. Richardson was not on the list, meaning she also will not be able to compete in the 4x100-meter relay. The track and field governing body said in a statement it was, quote, incredibly sympathetic to Richardson, but it also said this, quote, so while our heartfelt understanding lies with Sha'Carri, we must also maintain fairness for all of the athletes who attempted to realize their dreams by securing a place on the U.S. Olympic track and field team. Richardson told NBC News last week that she used marijuana after learning that her biological mother had died. That's it for us. The news continues. We want to hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.